Welcome back, everyone. This is the Prepared Mindset Podcast, and I'm your host, Austin. Welcome in to another great weekly discussion, or episode rather. Just happens to be a discussion this week with a fantastic guest, which I'll get to in a moment. But we are rolling through February. It's actually over 40 degrees here in Michigan. I don't know how long that's going to last. My hope is that it'll be a pretty permanent trend, and that with the next several weeks here, we'll have that so that we can start getting back to normal life activities, like hitting the gun range and, you know, being able to go outside for longer than, you know, 5 to 10 minutes safely. For those of you guys that live, you know, in the warmer states up here, it's been a pretty harsh winter. And I know I don't always trust the almanac when it says that, or especially, right, the meteorologists when they forecast us to have a harsh winter. And certainly there's a lot to surviving the cold, and there's tips and tricks and things that we pick up here up in the north that some of you guys, you know, down south don't really get into. We take for granted up here stuff that I wouldn't normally consider to be like preparedness or prepping advice and stuff, just because it gets to the point, right, where it's normal life. We just expect the winter to be a certain way about things. You buy certain things, you stage stuff and certain ways, you park your car a certain way just to prevent the cold wind from blowing into your radiator if you have an older vehicle and stuff like that. So for us, really, we experienced several weeks of bad weather, and we talked about this as we were coming back from SHOT Show just a couple weeks ago, was that the actual attendees at SHOT out in Vegas, not from the Midwest or the northern states, were really working and fighting to have their flights rescheduled to get home ahead of Friday evening, rather, because the anticipation was that that's when the winter ice storm was going to blow through the center of the country. And certainly that was not a false anticipation or a false idea, right? That's exactly what ended up happening. And the problem is not getting home before the storm, it's getting home with enough time to prep before the storm. I know I had several friends that had to make it back to property and farms and things like that to get things set up and ready to go. But speaking of SHOT Show, my guest for this week is actually a friend of mine that I was able to connect with at SHOT Show, talked with him for, yeah, I'm going to say around 10 or 15 minutes. I definitely passed him multiple times going in and out of the event. It's absolutely crazy while you're there. But this week's guest is Tommy, and I am really going to apologize because you guys heard me just totally butcher, right, John Kettman's last name on last week's discussion. But I'm going to do my best here. Tommy Marchito, I think that's the correct pronunciation. It probably isn't, but that's the best I'm going to do here. So you guys stay tuned to the end of the episode when I will have probably the introduction here when we get over to my discussion with Tommy, because he'll say it and probably put me to shame, make me sound like a complete and total, you know, Neanderthal for not being able to do the linguistics all speakified very good and whatnot. But really, really excited to sit down and talk with Tommy because we've been working on this for a couple months now, where he was, you know, willing and ready to come on, and then he had some stuff pop up with work. He works in law enforcement, right? So those of you that know that lifestyle know that things can change very, very quickly, and then when severe things change, then you have to kind of match the severity. You kind of have to match the intensity. So we had to put a pin in that one, you know, which I totally get. It happens. Obviously, stuff's way more important than coming, you know, on the podcast here and talking with me. So he had some work stuff going on. Like I said, we were able to connect and talk for 15 or so minutes at SHOT Show, kind of bring me up to speed on what he's had going on. And hey, we had some time available, so we've been able to put it on the calendar to bring this discussion to all of you, something I've very much been looking forward to, because in addition to being in law enforcement and having that background, Tommy works as a canine handler in that capacity. And dogs are, you know, I love dogs. I do. As a pet, as a companion, when you talk about the entire discussion around personal preparedness, there's so many benefits that a dog can provide to you. But when we get into the law enforcement and military, the quote unquote, the tactical applications that a dog now adds to the conversation, the force multiplier that animal becomes, especially one that's well-trained to take commands and can work within a coordinated team setting, something like a SWAT team or an SRT team, something like a military team, where they are used to clear structures, where they are added to additional measures, right, to apply pressure to barricaded individuals and things like that. It is absolutely outstanding. I love scrolling through those videos on Instagram, right, where you can see dogs like bounding up a two-story wall almost and catching a ball in midair or climbing a ladder. And then I look at my dogs and I'm like, dude, what's your problem, man? You could be so much better. Knowing that ultimately those are two very different lifestyles, right? And I love my dogs. I would not trade my dog for anything in this world. My wife's dog might be a little bit of a different story, but they're great animals, really awesome. And like I said, there's just so many positives to having dogs in your household, from a regular old preparedness standpoint to obviously if they're a trained either protector dog, or they can be trained to alert for different medical issues and things like that if you're talking about a service animal. So really, really great. Love dogs, have loved dogs, always had them in my house while I was growing up. But speaking of my wife, because I mentioned her just a moment ago, Lexi is taking an expanded role here with what's going on coming out of SHOT Show. This is something we've been talking about for a while, and actually stood up today her Instagram page. So it's at Prepared with Lexi. We'll be cross-pollinating, if you will, on the social media content. But if you guys are looking for a different perspective, or if you're trying to maybe get your wife a little bit more interested, a softer tone, certainly a female perspective to a lot of these things, that's where we're going to be building all of that. So if you guys want to do me a solid and go head over to her Instagram page and just hit follow on that, there's going to be more coming, probably not at nearly the rate that I'm putting content out, obviously, but really, really cool, something very, very awesome that we have been planning for a little while now. Lexi also got to meet Tommy at SHOT Show and hear the conversation, the discussion, the stories, so all really, really good stuff. But before I get into this week's discussion, I have to tell you guys about our presenting sponsor for this week's episode, and that is Custom Night Vision. You guys, Custom Night Vision is a company based out of Houston, Texas, and it's a handful of just outstanding dudes who've made it their mission and their goal to provide the most transparent purchasing experience possible for night vision for you. Folks like you and I, prepared civilians. Hey, maybe if you're in law enforcement and military and you're looking to buy your own unit, they can help you out as well, guys, right? Head on over to CustomNightVision.com. That's the website. You can check out everything they have in stock. I get questions all the time. Can I afford night vision? Hey, what's your personal recommendation on a night vision unit? Or, hey, I don't think I'll ever be able to afford what I really want, and I don't want to settle for second best. And I totally get that. That's what Custom and the team is there to take care of for you. You can check out the website. Again, it's CustomNightVision.com. And when you get to the website, there's a chat function in the lower right-hand corner of the screen. You can actually reach out and talk with the team members at Custom, or you scroll down the bottom of the screen, they have the phone number listed. You can call the shop phone. You can talk to Ben. You can talk to Kevin. You can talk to Trevor, and you can actually have them walk you through, hey, what are you looking for? Binocular unit? Okay, what are my options for tubes? Here's my price point. Here's my budget. Here, most importantly, you guys, this is the biggest part of it, is what you're planning to do with that unit. And people are genuinely amazed and surprised, A, at what they can afford, but B, also at the price point that Custom is able to offer these products and services to their customer base. Absolutely fantastic, and they absolutely set the market on devices more often than not, you guys. Again, it's CustomNightVision.com. Go check out everything they got going on. They have the lights, they have the lasers, they have the entire line of Team Wendy helmets, because once you get the nods, you gotta have the helmet, right? They carry mounts from Wilcox, they have the new Alpha mount from Nocturne, you guys, and a whole bunch more. Actually, a pretty short list of stuff, or much shorter list of stuff that they don't offer. Great catalog of products available for you guys. Again, CustomNightVision.com. Big, big thank you to them as our presenting sponsor here of the Prepared Mindset Podcast. But like I said, this week's guest, Tommy, is sitting down with me. We're going to talk about his time in law enforcement. We're going to talk about dogs. And we're probably going to get into a whole bunch of other stuff, because honestly, that's just how these discussions go. I have been looking forward to this one for a while. It's been a couple months in the works. I know I always say that, but this genuinely has been, hey, there was a couple months, and then we got up to the week or two before the episode, the discussion. It's like, hey, man, I'm sorry. I have to put a pin in this. There's other more important stuff that's just taken precedent right now, either, with work and home and all the stuff that we all juggle, right? And his is just like more intense because of what he does for a living. So cool, man. No worries. We will reconnect after the holidays. Totally get it. And here we are. So it's February. So it took us a couple months. I want to say the original one was set for November. So 4 months, but it's okay. He's playing hard to get. I'm putting in the work. I'm okay with that. I'm comfortable. So should be a really fun discussion, you guys. With that, I'm going to stop running my trap and we'll jump on over to it. Tommy, man, finally. Welcome to the podcast, man.
Thanks for having me on, brother. Appreciate it. Connected to Chat Show helped this one out.
Yeah, no, that was for sure. That wasn't even planned. I think I told the story somewhere. I walked out of like the Huxworks booth, I think it was, and I almost walked right into you. And we actually finally got to meet, got to connect. It was, I don't know, a divine intervention. That's kind of gay, but maybe it was. I don't know, man.
I know we've been going back and forth a little while now, trying to get in touch as far as with my lifestyle going on. Sometimes I'm up 2-3 in the morning. I don't go to sleep till 2 days later. But yeah, definitely just kind of running into you over there. And I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah. I know that face.
Yeah, so that's right.
Lost as I could be. That was my first SHOT Show, first time in Vegas. Definitely just lost. So, you know, it's kind of just running into a couple different people. And then there you go, man. So here we are.
Yeah. And I've been looking forward to it, man. So let's dive in. Go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners, if you will. Maybe talk a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, all that good stuff.
Yeah, Tom Marquito. I'm here in Connecticut. I'm in a small town. It's actually a small city, but we're about 65,000 people. We're 10 square miles. I started law enforcement in 2013. That wasn't my initial endeavor. My initial endeavor was I was a professional college student for 5 years of those of you that know a bachelor's degree and 5 years of how long that took. Grew up playing sports. Hockey was one of the main ones. I then started with lacrosse, bounced around from a couple different colleges with a focus in physical therapy and exercise science with a minor in nutrition. And then I decided, you know what? It's just, I don't want to do the same thing over and over and over again. I have family in law enforcement from up in New York down to Virginia Beach, which I train very closely with their team now. And once I started, I kind of had that little family background of the SWAT or SRT world, sure, the dog stuff from the upstate New York guys, and just growing up around them. So I said, you know what, let me do this career. It's never going to be the same thing over and over and over again. You're going to see something different every single day. It's never going to be the same. So I started in 2013, finished the academy. From there, I started with FTO. After FTO, a couple years on the road, got the trial for our team, made our team. I want to say that was 2015. So I just completed my 13th year. In 2018, I got the opportunity to go for the canine. After that, it was another four-month academy with the dog, with the Connecticut State Police. And we've been running ever since, man. Within the last 2 years, I started with the United States Marshal Service Violent Fugitive Task Force for the District of Connecticut, which we'll get into in a little while on how that that kind of unfolded. But that's a story in itself from a reputation that's been built, I guess, with blood, sweat, and not my tears. We'll say that.
Yeah, man, it's kind of a lot, dude. So why the dog though? Because I mean, there's so many things you could do in the law enforcement space, especially somebody who's inclined, right, to like go for, I don't want to say higher aspirations, because that's like, I don't want to be demeaning to people that don't do those things, because it's all really important stuff. But why'd you end up going working with a dog? Was there like something that just kind of jumped at you, or, you know?
So the dog stuff came up at a young age. So one of my cousins was up in New York in a very, very shitty city. I think at the time it was like the highest murder rate per capita in the state of New York. For your listeners there, if they know what city it was, I won't say, but that was it was a very busy city for them. And he had a dog at the time. His name was Tanzo. I was probably in my early teenage years and just constantly around that dog. So that dog came to every family function. They came to every family vacation. He was constantly around. So I always got to play with him. My cousin would let me do the runoff tracks. He would let me do the bite sleeves. He would show me all the, tips, tricks, and obedience work. And it kind of just became a love for it. Like, this dog will literally do anything I ask it to do, and it's not even my dog. So what is it going to be like when I get my own dog? So I signed up for ours. I didn't get the first go around. The way it works is you get to go to the test, and they want two. So Connecticut State Police is who we go through. They want two in case one fails the PT test, the other one's the, fallback. But our initial guy passed it. He was ready for it. Good for him. I had to wait my time. And in 2018, that is when I was able to get the opportunity at my dog. His name is Otto. He's an all black, 90% German Shepherd, 10% Mal, that we got from a guy in upstate New York. He was born here when most of our vendors' dogs are from overseas. He was born here. So we got him at 3 months. And the
It's
dog
young.
trainers, the dog handlers we had, and previous dog handlers and trainers, they kind of passed him around from time to time to time till I got him on his 1 year birthday. And he was just a rock star. So there's absolutely all the kudos to those guys who passed him around, trained him up, put a lot of break work into him, or outwork, whatever, whatever people call it as far as their region, but we call it break work. They put a lot of efforts into that. So I just kept up with it. The dog is a lot of peaks and valleys. So you have really, really, really good days that you're like a proud dad, and then you just have really, really, really bad days. And you're like, what am I doing? And you just want to, you literally get into what we call domestics in the back of the car. You're hopping in the back. You guys are tussling around in the back of the car in the kennel. And then you get out, brush each other off, and you're like, all right, let's get back to work. Because it's a bond that you will never see with two humans. You will never see it. Dogs can't speak. They can't tell you how they feel. They're just amazing creatures at what they can do. Absolutely amazing creatures. So that's what drove it to me.
do you have your own dog, or does he live with, I don't even know what the rules are around some of those things, but do you have like your own animals in addition to him, or is that like a no-no just because I know with scents and territory and stuff like that, it can get weird with some dogs. How does that work?
So he's been good. I mean, he's been because he was passed around at 3 months, right? So we got him at 3 months old. He was passed around, and he basically went in the car with the other canines. So he learned alongside the canines with that pack mentality, like, oh, okay, canine so and so is barking, I'm gonna bark too. He's getting his ball for barking, and biting, I'm gonna bite too. When it came time to a lot of exposures, environmental exposures with loud noises, different textures and flooring, and we literally just run through the buildings with the seasoned dogs, and he would just follow us at that pack mentality. So I have a little pit bull at home. He is 5 years old now. I had my dog first and then rescued a pit bull. And that was a little bit of a hell and high water moment because the pit bull just wanted to go. And the work dog, just like us, you get home from work, you just want to relax, man. And it took a little while to kind of get those two to figure it out, but now they're just inseparable. They'll play fight, and it sounds like World War III in my house over dogs, and then they'll just walk their separate ways. But our policy doesn't require you to have no home, no other animals in the house. It doesn't require you to not have a cat. It doesn't require you to not have another dog. We don't require you to keep the dog outside. The only thing that is asked is it has its own space, whether it's an outside kennel run, whether it's like my basement that I'm here in now, he can have his own space to go out to. That was the only thing that they required, as well as like no apartment. So if you're an apartment, then it's not the time for you to have a working dog because a dog needs a place to go. So I could put him in my backyard, which is fenced in, and he doesn't want to do anything. He just sits there and stares at the window, waits for me to come out. But I can go down the street. I'm a block from the water, block from the sand, here on right on Long Island Sound. So we'll go there and play on the beach, and we'll walk the street with no leash, and all the neighbors know them. So it's very simple as far as my policies. There are policies out there where like you can't bring the dog inside, and there are some dogs out there where you can't bring the dog inside. It is a working dog and a working dog only, and they're on off switch. It's not a bad thing. They don't have it. They're constantly in work mode. What matters is that the handler recognizes it and says, hey, this is just my work dog. He will not be, or she will not be a pet. She is a
Yeah.
work dog. And when I get home from work, she goes in her kennel. He goes in his kennel, usually garage or basement or something like that. And then they'll meet again when it's time to go back to work.
Yeah.
So, but
And
we don't have that.
that's something I never, I mean, it makes sense in the working application. I always felt so bad when I had friends growing up where they're like, oh, the dog doesn't come inside unless it's like dangerous out. I'm like, dude, how can you do that? You know, I, and maybe it's just like, I have two dogs of my own. I love them. I love having them in the house and everything and being around them. Actually, for SHOT Show, we had to board them for the very first time, and we went and dropped them off Sunday night before we left. And we got home like there's nobody jumping on me, bugging me for my Cheddar Bay biscuit or anything. I'm just it's like quiet. I'm like, this is I don't like this, man. I don't know how people could do it, honestly. But I guess if it is a a trained. Like an environmental thing, right, for them. Like, hey, you guys are you're always in that mentality. If you come in the house, that causes additional problems. They have to be outside. I guess I get that. I would personally, I'd have emotional difficulties with it.
It's dog to dog, right? So there was, I want to say it's a page called Canines Deployed. Very good page. There's Worthless Handler, another very good page. And they put up some discussions as far as, what are people doing across the country, right? So, Florida, I'm here in Connecticut, there's out west. Everybody's doing something different. All the trainers have different methodologies. All the principles are the same, but the methodology behind it is just a little bit different, where it's constantly no dog in the house. It's constantly, what have you. But then he's got to earn it in a way. He's got to earn it. So he started off in his crate. I'd leave the house. He'd start off in the crate, and he earned having free roam of the house. At the end of the day, it's I don't have cameras outside because that's evidence in itself. You're going to come in my house. It's great. I'm not going to film that one. But two, good luck if you get into my house, because the pit bull's worse than the shepherd. So, I have a work dog. Why am I not going to use it for home security as well?
Of course.
That's it,
Yeah.
he's got it. I'm responsible for him, but it's at the end of the day, it comes down to how well the handler knows the dog, how well the dog can adapt to the home. Sometimes, kids come into play, and the dog wants to be the alpha to the kid. And there's just not enough time to really figure that out right now. So it would be like, all right, I got to put my dog in a crate, or I got to put my dog out in the kennel run in the garage, which is heated or cooled or what have you. And it's just what works for the handler and what works for the policy of the police department. That's what it comes down to. There's no wrong way. There is no wrong way. My guy knows as soon as his work collar goes on, his work collar is a sub-second collar, I'll tell you that. And as soon as that collar goes on, he knows it's work time. As
Yeah.
soon as we get in that car, he knows it's work time. As soon as we get out of that car, it is playtime because his collar comes off. So that has been the most consistent thing since day one. Believe it or not, you do the things you don't mean to do the most consistent because you don't think about them. Whereas when you go to deploy in like a high risk thing, you're thinking about a bunch of different things, and the dog is like trying to read you. What are you telling me to do? You're telling me to down. You're telling me to stop barking. You're telling me to shut up. You've never told me to shut up before. I don't know what shut up means. So it's
Right.
some of the most consistent things you do as far as your morning routine, putting on his collar, grabbing your car keys, starting the car because it's 2 degrees out up here. And now he's ready to roll. Pop the door from the doorway, and I just let him run into the car. He runs in, and we go. He's just nuts. He's nuts in the car. He spins, he barks, he spins, he barks. So partially deaf in
Yeah.
my right ear.
So all the same, some of the same things at least that most of us deal with animals in the car. So does he, is it anytime you're on shift, he's with you? Like if you get called at 2 in the morning for something, I don't know, right? So whatever reason, do you have to go like, hey buddy, get up, like time to go get
Oh
your,
yeah.
I'm
Yep.
every
So we'll
time.
say this morning, right? So I work with the Violent Fugitive Task Force for the District of Connecticut for the U.S. Marshals. And we had, they call it a collateral. So out of Washington, D.C., we got a collateral from there to, kind of keep it down and dirty as to what we deal with. It's really no secret, and it shouldn't be, kind of brushed off because of what we deal with. But it was somebody allegedly raping their girls' daughter, and the girl walked in on him and ended up killing her allegedly. So he fled here to Connecticut. We put a location on him, and we went out this morning at 2 in the morning. He looks at me and he sees me get my, as soon as my pants go on and that Velcro belt starts attaching, he's like spinning in his crate, man, spinning, spinning,
Yeah, he
spinning,
knows.
spinning, spinning.
He
Yeah.
knows it's game time, yeah.
And then it's whining and barking, and I'll never discourage that because he is so excited to go to work. That's where animals, man, they are always, always, always willing to work for their handler. That's why the dog stuff is so rewarding. You get a partner, they could be lazy one day. You know, nothing to that. Everyone gets their lazy day, but a partner that's not human with four legs and pointy ears, man, unless you experience it, you just won't know that bond. It
Yeah.
is something that is completely, words can't explain it. And he's
So,
8 now.
and with that too, so he's with you for pretty much everything. So training days, range days. I think I've seen some stuff on your socials with range days. But I mean, because that stuff has to be worked through, right? So if you were to obviously discharge your firearm in whatever application, whatever you're doing, right? He has to be able to work with you based off of, I don't know. I assume there's probably some body language stuff, verbals. I don't know what else there really is. Is it, I know, you see so much stuff on TV and you're like, I just assume that this is how it works. Are all the commands in like German or something?
So there are ones there, this is where it gets down to like personal preference, you know, the old school trainers, it's not even old school, but like how they were trained, the way we've always done it type stuff, where if you use English, there's a possibility that the bad guy can tell your dog to do stuff.
Right.
Like,
Yeah.
okay, I've proven that well over 30 plus times that it doesn't work live. You know, not saying it would never, somebody might sound just like me. They might be wearing, you know, same deodorant I do. Maybe wash their clothes the same way I do and confuse it for me. It might happen. Never say never, and I never say always. So there's dogs that learn in German. There's dogs that learn in English. There's e-collars. There's prong collars. There's all different tools. Right. But at the end of the day, you want your dog to listen to you without those tools. Those tools are little reminders for communication. Some handlers will overdo it. I know when I first started, like we're constantly leash pressure. We're just too much. We're too stupid. We're the dumb end of the leash. The handler is the dumb end of the leash. So you're constantly trying to learn. The trainers are telling you, hey, loosen the leash because it's called opposition reflex. So if you're pulling backwards on the leash, your dog wants to lunge forward. I'm not familiar in e-collar, but I've watched a couple. I know Jay Rigney. He's very, very, very good trainer. Very good with e-collar. He talks about putting it for the opposition. So if you want it, the e-collar over here, if the stimulus is this way, he's going to go that way. If you put it on top of the neck, the stimulus is here, they're going to go down. So I can't speak on that behalf, but it's the same as opposition reflex. So when you pull back on the leash, they're going to forge forward. That came with just a lot of a learning curve. So to be honest, man, I don't really run a leash live. I don't run a leash. He listens better
Really?
without it because of too much input.
Yeah, that, I mean, that does make an amount of sense. Like when you talk about, like, 'cause we talk about it a lot now as humans, right? With people becoming like overstimulated, it becomes hard to focus because you got too much going on. And that's what, and you don't have any problems. Like he's with you, he moves where he's supposed to. Like that is actually okay. My dog, I think I could maybe do like basic shit with. My wife's dog, not so much. But like my dog, that he's not gonna take off down the street. He loves me. He hates being outside. So like it's good. He straight to the car and straight back in the house. But that, I guess that does make a certain degree of sense. Because I mean, I've seen guys with like waist belts that they clip the leash to and
Yeah, a
stuff like
waist
that.
lead.
And yeah, so it's
That comes
really
down to training, really. What do
yeah.
you, what is your why? What are you doing on a regular basis? So I'm in the patrol division, one of the sergeants. I have 9 police officers under me, that are our shift lieutenant, and I'm stuck on the day shift, which I'm not a fan of the day shift's work because it's all past tense from overnight nonsense. But a higher probability of active shooter stuff because that's when everyone's at work. So it comes down to what is your why, right? So are you running a dog in, you know, the special forces? Are you running a dog for just a tactical team? Are you running a dog like myself where first is patrol, then it's your part-time tactical team, or, you know, the Marshals Violent Fugitive Task Force where I run the dog with them? it comes down to what do you have to do on a regular basis. That's what I'm gonna train with the most. And then the range days, somebody caught my ear and that stuff. They're like, "Oh my God, you shot 9mm." Like, yeah, every so often I will shoot where he doesn't have ears. I don't get the luxury
Right.
to put a helmet on them with, 3M Peltor earmuffs and lenses and all that stuff. I don't get that luxury. So somebody commented one time on the range day where shooting 5 rounds and 9mm, it wasn't suppressed and this and that. And cool, man, that's great. I get it. But at the same time, every year or every so often, I gotta make sure he's not gonna get overzealous. And we call it a flash bite. Maybe other people have different terms, but get overexcited and then he ends up nipping your calf. So I gotta know his reaction because reactions can change as you grow older. Reactions can change after certain incidents where they end up biting and they hear different noises. And now some people have to work, they work gunfire for the dogs only during biting. Now the dog is going to associate the gunfire with biting. Being a firearms instructor, I had the luxury with, we're here, we're Post in Connecticut. Post is, oh my God, that's a story for another day. They're atrocious right now. They're falling apart. That ship's burning and sinking and hit an iceberg all at the same time. But being up there with the recruits, I get the luxury to have the dog out there. I put the dog at the 50-yard line while we're on the 15-yard line and keep him in a down stay. So he gets just acclimated. Then I'll take his toy, which is a rope ball on a rope, and I'll just huck it back to him. So that way he knows the reward's gonna come to him. If he stays put, reward's gonna come to him. He doesn't always get released to come to me. It's a variable reward system. By no means am I a trainer. I am just a dog handler. I am a trainer of my own dog. I could never diagnose somebody else's problems outside of how I overcame my own problems. And that was just with a lot of exposure. So when the dog hears gunfire, he immediately starts looking for the ball that's in a dump pouch on my back left hip. So that I have instilled to him because he's proven himself on the street with live apprehensions or bites, whatever you want to politically call them. And I know he's going to go. When I tell him to go, when I give him that command, he's going to go. It is much easier to put them into that drive because those dogs love to do that as a game to them. It is a higher reward system. So I train obedience with gunfire very often. A lot of people just find it late. It's to me, it's lazy, but it's simple that like you put them on a bite sleeve and walk in gunfire. Start with the 22 you can get from, Home Depot, 22 blanks, right? To that concrete gun. So 22s, SIM guns, this, that, and then work up to suppress 5.56. And, there's a whole concept to it that there's a rabbit hole we can go down and there's different principles, different ideology, but that's just how it's worked for me. And it's worked live. I'm not saying it was perfect. I could probably go back, diagnose, and see my failures and work at it. But at the same time, that it's not a full-time thing. I have to still track. I have to do evidence recovery. We did narcotics, but I gave that up after two injuries back to back. I would have to make up an entire year, but it dogs are such a great tool, man, especially patrol dogs, cross-trained. And there's a lot of people that'll, kind of get their panties in a bunch over this, but I don't think comfort dogs should be in the police world. The Red Cross, the fire departments, social workers, those people that, talk about, oh, de-escalation, this and that. Take those comfort dogs and get them the hell out of the policing. Get them out.
I didn't know that they had comfort dogs in policing. I feel like that puts, like, I understand why people might, with the current political climate, right? People trying to, like, hey, let's do social work things,
It's
let's get.
forced community policing in itself. It's forced and it's fake.
And well, and I just, I don't know. I feel like if you need a dog, that's something that you should bring into your life yourself. I think that there's, I don't know, there's just so many variables when it comes into something like that, let alone when you start now bringing it onto an active, I'd say, scene or something, right? You have the working dog that operates under one set of circumstances. You have the comfort dog get introduced potentially, right? Like, I don't know. I feel like that's going to lead to a whole bunch of issues that you don't need to deal with. But you know what I mean? Just like remove that variable, just stop. I don't know.
Let me put it this way, right? So a lot of the comfort dogs are floppy-eared labs. Why are we not training them in tracking? Why are we not training them in narcotics? Why are we not training them in explosives? or ESD, electronic service storage devices for child pornography cases. We have money dogs you could train them in. We have accelerant dogs for fire and stuff like that. We have a narcotics lab. She's awesome. Her name is Hanny. She's absolutely awesome. She's found a ton of narcotics and gotten a ton of narcotics off the street and traps and everything else. And when we go to schools and do demos, you unclip her and she does the same thing. She does the same thing. We know she's got a purpose. She's got a purpose. Those dogs have a purpose. They're called retrievers for a reason. You take that out of them, you're just depressing the dog. That's all you're doing. You're depressing the dog. I call it the SeaWorld effect. With the orcas, with their little dorsal fin flopping over, I call it the SeaWorld effect. They're depressed. There's
No.
one dog in Connecticut out, by the Stanford area. There's a picture of him, her, him. I'm not quite sure, but and that dog just looks like it's about to just go jump in traffic. Like give that dog a job, man. Give that dog a job. The job is not going to comfort people. Like, yeah, they can just run around, lick faces, and you can claim this and that. That, oh, well, they sense or they add pressure to people because it's sensory overload, and that's great. Leave it to social workers. My dog has bit a lot of people, one of which was on a stretcher. Guess what he did with his ball? He ran over and wanted to play with the guy.
Oh, damn. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, there. I bring my dog to a ton of school camps, a ton of school recess days. Guess what they get to do? Run around with them, play ball with them. Not every dog can do it, don't get me wrong,
Sure.
but we don't need to force the community policing down the community's throat in a fake manner. Like, oh, look at us, look at me.
And even just the choices, like you said, the retrievers and stuff. And I remember reading some things where people are saying, or certain politicians, of course, getting into, well, we need to move away from using shepherds and mals and stuff, and start using retrievers because they look less aggressive. And I'm like, well, I mean, maybe, but isn't that just because like those br certain breeds are better for family homes? Like, all dogs, I think, are good dogs. I think that you see less homes with shepherds and stuff because they're high energy working dogs and they need that stimulation and they need it. And people stay away from it because they know that, it's going to be a pain in the ass for the most part. And if you got labs and stuff, they're supposed to be better with families, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I get it, but I don't know that's actually accurate and that it's giving an equal representation of the dogs. I think kind of what you're saying with a lot of these dogs and stuff, just because of how their ears are. They can still be really helpful. They can still do a whole lot of shit that we can't. They're like I said, all dogs I think are great dogs.
Yeah, their nose, you can't beat a dog's nose. It's 100 times more powerful than ours. The way it was worded to me, which kind of makes sense, is what I use with the kids, is that they smell in 3D. So they can smell where we smell an entire pepperoni pizza. They smell the cheese, the pepperoni, the flour, the this, the that. They can smell each thing individually. So, again, I'm not against using it for community policing. I'm against forced community policing. Like tomorrow, I'm gonna go read a book for kids. Christ, I could barely read myself. So I'm gonna go read a book for kids and try to do that stuff. But that's because they want to have the fun conversations within reason. They're 7-year-old kids, but they still ask questions of curiosity that you can formulate the answer to for 7-year-olds. There's no need to be like, oh, we're not gonna have the 5'11", 240-pound SWAT guy come in. We're gonna have the emotional support handler come in because it looks kinder, gentler, funner. Meanwhile, the kids don't actually want that. The best part about demos that we do is when the dog bites. That is where those kids go insane. We give a countdown, we give his command, and the kids love it. They can care less about obedience. They can care less about whose birthday it is, where they get to go put the keys down and hide them under a rock or hide them this and the dog goes and finds them. They can care less about that stuff. They love to see the dogs bite them. They
Hell
love it. And that to me is like you see these kids smile, laugh, even special needs kids, they understand it. They love it. Where now you force it because you want to bring in some nonsensical community policing bullshit and force that down people's throats. Like, cool, but I got it. But just give that dog a job. If politically, like Connecticut is a very blue state, right? So When I was in narcotic stuff with the dog, shepherds could not search or sniff people. Sniff being the proper term.
Specifically,
Lags,
shepherds, the breed.
yes. Labs can recognized by the court because of the training for biting and the intimidation factor, because you're, quote, more likely to incriminate yourself in fear of being bit by a shepherd, a Mal, a Dutchie, than you are a floppy-eared dog being a retriever, like a Labrador retriever of some kind. So that's where they come into play, and they're crucial. So I can get behind the argument of, like, okay, the labs we want going for, dementia patients that walk off, kids
Sure.
that walked off or got lost. There's some dogs that are trained to bite at the end of tracks. Our dogs are trained to sit at the end of tracks. I could see both sides of it. But if you want to have a lab, have it do a job. Have it do a job. Don't have it sit around and claim that it senses people's emotional distress. Yeah, me too. It's about looking at their facial expression.
Yeah, and that's, I think you start putting limitations in there, and it leads to other problems. Like, stuff like that never actually solves anything. I feel like it just creates different issues. And yeah, I don't know. I think that's, is that still a law that's in effect for you guys as
The
of today?
shepherds sniffing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is, I don't know the actual case law on it. I'd have to research it. Our trainer from the Connecticut State Police, he is such a nerd. He can rattle off case law. He is so good. I could call him at any given time, be like, hey, I have this, this, and this. And he'll just be like, US v. so and so or state v. so and so. And I'm like, got it. He's like, Google it, read
Thanks.
it, read
Yeah.
the abstract, and you'll be good to go. But that's what trainers are for, man. It's your referral. They're there for you at any given time of the day or night. So, but that's kind of like my spiel as far as like floppy-eared dogs, pointy-eared dogs, community policing. I can go on for days about that. But I mean,
But I
all in
mean,
all, man.
have you seen a detriment though? I mean, like, 'cause I think that the retrievers still could be great at the job, right? Like, or have you experienced where the shepherds are more of a, I guess, a better breed for the work necessarily?
Oh, 100%. I don't want a lab tracking for a robbery suspect with a gun. Well, what are we going to do when you find him? Lick him?
Well, no, but
Yeah,
I mean,
so that's where.
I've been bit by labs before, so I mean, that's what I'm asking. I'm like, I don't know if they don't have that natural like aggressiveness that you look for, maybe, or something like that, or because I
That's
mean, I'm
few and
sure they
far
could do a
between.
lot of it, but.
You could train a dog to do literally anything. That's why you see dogs that are so aggressive. There's some really, really, really good trainers out there that are aggressive rehabbers, and they're able to just kind of fix that dog. You can make a dog literally do anything that they're willing to do. It's just, I'm not going to track with a lab for a violent crime. I'm going to call for a shepherd. So having the resources is what I'm all about. Let's have that resource and use the right resource for the job. Let's use
Makes
the
sense.
right tool for the job. If
Yeah.
all we have is a lab, maybe we look into another tool to assist. A drone, right? Let's put a drone up.
Yeah.
Let's get flare going. Let's get IR going. Let's get something going. So if that lab is the only tool we have to potentially track down somebody who caused harm to someone else, let's put that drone overhead. So in case we get too close, we know, like, hey, there's a heat signature, right? So there's
Yeah.
always a way around it. Always a way around it. It never sell yourself short, like, hey, I'm just a tracking lab, because we have those. But then narcotics labs, right? My guy, we wanted passive alerts for narcotics, which is a nice sit, but I would get lazy with it, and he would work so hard that when he would get frustrated, he would rip the headrest right off. He would just rip it right off,
Of
and that was just
your vehicle?
nope. Of whose car we're sniffing, we're
Oh,
now
okay.
if we're inside, we're now searching, for the listeners to not jump down my throat versus open air sniff versus a search. He'll immediately know, because he's still a bite dog. So he'll immediately know, like, okay, there's some fear odor on the seat, the ass of the seat. What's the first thing he does when I go to put him in? He rips the ass of the seat apart.
Yeah.
I'm not going to stop him because he still has that drive in him. I don't care.
Yeah.
We have a reason to be there. We have a lawful reason, which we did the open air sniff, open air free search, open air sniff. We now develop probable cause. So now we can tell you to get out of the car. You know, the Mims case, get out of the car. I don't care. Roll your windows up. Do whatever you got to do. It's not going to stop the dog. It's not. It's actually just a little bit more helpful for a little, a certain area. But and then when it's time to go in the car, he still knows there's fear odor. That it's called apocrine. It's that fear odor. That's their hunting drive. So when people take off running, that's what they're trained to sniff out. Apocrine is apocrine, whether it's from animals or whether it's from humans. They're trained prey-driven animals.
Yeah.
And when people run from crimes, that's what they're tracking. They're tracking that apocrine, that human odor. Now, when you get, you know, dementia patients and elderly that wander off or kids that wander off, it's a lot less apocrine. But they still have a, they're giving off human odor. It's a very simple process. Sometimes harder than others in different environments. There's dogs that get to only track in the woods. Then there's dogs like ours or, you know, down in Florida that go through some very harsh environments from heat and cities and, you know, everything else. And then, you know, there's like New York city dogs that you take a city dog and put it in the woods, they're going to track a hell of a lot better than a woods dog, put them in the city just because of the experience.
Yeah. So with everything that you do with your dog, and it sounds like he's tried a little bit of everything in terms of applications and stuff like that. When you guys like, how do you, I guess, decide when to use a dog in certain like instances? So like, I'm thinking like a surrounding call out or something, right? Where you're trying to get somebody to come out of the house, they don't want to comply, and there's so many tools, right? Like you said, you could send a drone in there and clear the like most of the house with a drone potentially. There's break and rakes, and there's all kinds of stuff you could do, right? When do you make the decision that it's time to send the dog in, and is it his job to just go find that individual and I guess and bite him, or like how do you apply the dog in a way that's going to help you guys accomplish the overall goal?
So it comes down again to why are we there in the first place? Are we there for a lone barricaded gunman? Are we there for, we'll just take simplicity, right? So we get called out, we go for a murder warrant, and we make contact at the front door for a surrounding call out. They come out to us. Yep, he's in the basement. He's not coming up. So we will, you know, keep our containment. At first, the dog is really for containment because if somebody tries to get out and run, the dog, you know, the dog's there to chase down, and we know, like, hey, if so and so runs, do not go anywhere. Let the dog do its job. Follow the dog. Got it. And we'll have multiple dogs. We'll have dog on front side. We'll have dog on rear side. And the depending on where they jump out of, that's the dog that's going to go. So you have to have two dog handlers that are very well versed in each other. You can't just say, hey, okay, I saw him come out the front and run down the street. That wasn't my side. If he came out of my side, I'm letting the dog go because dog needs what we call target lock. It's kind of like iron sights, right? So if I have my front sight post, I use his ears and his nose in a sense of looking right through his ears over his head. I know he sees him and he's locked on and he'll go. So we'll have multiple dogs around the perimeter of the home. And then there's a couple dogs that are a lot better inside than they are, not than they are outside, but there are some dogs that work well inside, where around a team, around a drone, there's other dogs that just need. They just, one, there's not enough time to have them learn it. And two, they're just not made for it. So that's why there's even dog selections when it comes to SRT, SWAT, special operations, stuff like that. There's dog selection processes too. Do they bark too much? Do they not bark enough? Do they bite hard enough? Do they search good enough? So it comes down to that. So when it comes to the tools, let's, you know, stick with surround and call out. We'll call people out. We'll gather our intel as we go. We'll use our cover. Multiple Bearcats if we have it, or usually for us it's one and then a couple different trucks with engine blocks. If we get everybody out of the house, we then we'll send in the drone. The drone, like you said, can clear most of the structure. And what we will do is, depending on if there's still people in there or some of the homes that we get are just so bad as far as like code. So like one, like the two, the duplex is actually connected, so I can't send a dog because we don't have a search warrant to go into that house, but it's connected. And so if we stick to single family, right, we send the drone in. We just had this condo, send the drone in, Drone goes down, doesn't see anybody. Drone then flips over. Okay, initial sweep, right? Take your priorities of threat, open spaces, open doors, closed doors, all that. People with guns. There was nobody in that initial sweep, right? So we sent the dog. It was into the basement. We sent the dog. Dog was kind of just, he stuck to the stairwell of the basement. He was sniffing like rung by rung by rung. I put it up on my Instagram page a little while back for some learning purposes. And it got to the point where like we have what's called an alert where it's a bark, a scratch, or this or that. There ended up being a false wall, kind of like some wainscot, where the dog couldn't see the crack in it, but he was narrowing it down because there was just so much odor in that house. So he's narrowing it down. However, we're there for a guy with a murder warrant. I'm not going to wait until he gives me this little Hollywood bark.
Oh, yeah.
So it was at that time that this is where your team comes in, right? I am still a canine handler. I still want him to perform in that Hollywood way. I still want him to have that perfect alert. My team was like, hey, let's get him out of there. Your confidence on the sales. I'm like, yeah. He's just going back and forth, back and forth. He will not leave that area. But he didn't give me that perfect bark to like get him out of there before, you know, somebody ends up shooting him through a wall or something. So,
Right.
and again, it's tunnel vision for me watching the dog. So my team, we had those discussions off to the side. Like, if you see something, say something as far as me doing something I shouldn't be, because I'm so zoned in on the dog. They're like, get him out of there. I recall him, and the drone flips over. And as soon as I recall him, that's where he decides to take a peek out from that false wall and start coming up the stairs. He wasn't going to come out with the dog down there because he could hear him. So,
Yeah, fuck no, I can come out there with the dog down there either. How do I get
yeah, his we
bit?
call it shutting down. So it's that very big inhale and that very big exhale. And he was doing it in every rung of the stairwell, but you couldn't see through the stairwell. So we used each tool individually. Without the tools working together, we would have had to put bodies down there. Now, again, that's our job. I get that the internet argument, like speed, surprise, violence of action. Got it. Cool, man. Good to go. We still have policies, laws, and ethics to live by, right? Could we have done Connecticut? It's called Officer Created Jeopardy. Could we have done something different to not have to get into a shooting? Meaning use a drone, use a dog, use this. If that was an option and we didn't use it, not having an exigent reason to just go, we're probably going to get hemmed up in a lawsuit, or we're probably going to get hemmed up in court for Officer Created Jeopardy, where we're now getting hit for manslaughter or assault one. People don't realize that on the internet. It's tough. So we pull back and we call out. If we got it now, we know he's there. We can contain gas. We can start pumping gas into that one area of the house. Is it going to fumigate into the rest? Yes, it's going to, but we can really focus on a lot of stuff in that one specific area of the basement because the dog did his job.
Right.
If he was just there, yeah, the dog would just, you know, seek and destroy. That's great. But, you know, sometimes it's just a tool. The tool was used. The tool was used to locate somebody. They didn't get to bite somebody, but we call them back and now we work the problem. Without that dog, you're going to have to go down there and work a whole bunch of problems. You're going to have to do the entire structure clearance priorities from people with guns, people, open space, open doors, closed doors. Now you got to sift through piles of clothes because it's never a pretty shoot house. Hate to break it to you. Never a pretty shoot house. I got some pictures I can send you that's just hoarding. People, oh, you know, you got to go, you know, don't strong wall. You got to go point of domination. Like, that's great. I can't get there. I
Yeah,
can't
there's too
get
much
there.
shit in the way. Yeah, you just
Yeah,
can't do that.
it's a hoarding house. Now, some stash houses are great. There's just a couch and like a TV. But some
Does
hoarding
that
houses.
with like with the dog specifically, because like we talked about how sensitive their noses are and stuff like that, with the, like how does that work with the dog, and how exhausting is that for you as the handler trying to like, and I don't know, maybe they're really well trained, you don't have to worry about it, but like, hey, no, stay on this, move with me. Like, how is that working through some of those like horde situations? Because I'm sure the smells are everywhere, which is one thing, but then there's just obstacles everywhere. You got your team moving through. Like, how is that with the dog?
So we won't even send the team in until the drone has gone through, until the dog has gone through as much as he will, and then the team will start moving behind him. If I have called, now my guy will go down into a basement. If there is absolutely no odor in that basement, he will stop at the bottom of the stairs and just stare at me like, "What do you want me to do? There is nothing down here." Otherwise, he'll go back. He'll go forth. He'll start running all over the place if there's odor. And they're tricky too. So the the hoarding situations, you really want to use your tools because you're losing your footing, you're climbing over all this shit. Like people talk about flat range work, that's great. Are you setting up your flat range as a hoarding situation? Are you constantly shooting on, the raised platform with chains so you can constantly have an off balance thing? So there's you want to train to perfection as much as you can and constantly challenge yourself because when it does get to the real world, it's never going to be perfect. But you learn from your failures. So we've learned what the how to read the dog. Like have I missed people when I was newer? Yeah, I've missed people. Have I missed evidence? Yeah, I've missed evidence. Because I wasn't reading them properly. Then it's frustrations and whatnot. But as far as my two teams, from my department's SRT guys to the Marshall's Violent Fusion Task Force, we have lengthy conversations on how to help read the dog. Like they know what shutting down means with that harsh inhale and that super driven exhale. They know what it means when he does a head hook. So he's running, running, running. Next thing you know, he breaks his neck to the left because he gets a whiff of that odor. And those are the things like hoarding, right? They're constantly sniffing through stuff and they're able to smell all different smells the same time, not just like a dead body, right? So they smell the maggots, they smell the body, they smell everything. They smell high, they smell low. What training you put in is what you get out. But it gives you the ability to know, okay, that clothes pile, that's the size of a human. The dog's not indicating whatsoever. The under the bed, the dog's not indicating whatsoever. However, now this closed door in there, the dog is, it won't leave the closed door. So maybe we put our attention there. We clear our corners and put our attention there. And now when we go to pop that door, the dog's going to be first in. Maybe we give a couple announcements or maybe we don't. Depends on the situation. Is it feasible? Is it not? So there's a ton of different ways to utilize the dog. There was one failure that we had where we locate a guy that shot at one of our surveillance guys. We locate him in the apartment. We call him out. It's old brick. We're right at the fatal funnel. However, it is old, solid brick-filled concrete. We call that cover. It's not concealment. We call that cover.
Oh, 100%.
So we're doing a call out from the hallway, and he finally, I fire the dog up, and he goes, "Oh, hell no," and decides to come out. Now we're going to send the drone in. Drone doesn't see anybody. We send the dog in. The dog wants to go. He runs down to the bathroom, which is where he was trying to cut his dreads off to change his appearance. And then he wants to come out and go down the hall. Dog's not wrong because that's the odor. The guy came out and he's now down the hall in handcuffs. He's not wrong. It's just I had to learn and do some more drills to break him through that to say, hey, okay, that odor goes out in a way. Dad's not worried about that. Let me see if there's any other odor that's going to harm my dad or my team. So that took some training. And you can't be afraid to be humiliated or fail. I brought that back to the training group and I'm like, hey, this is what I did. So we set it up. Every dog, same concept. Same concept. They wanted to follow that odor out. But then you force them to realize, like, okay, if I keep searching, I'm going to find more. If I keep searching, I'm going to find more. And then getting the dog around the team is in and itself, it takes a lot. One, is anybody on the team afraid of, like, deathly afraid of dogs, right? Because the dog's going to pick up on that and they probably won't bite them, but they'll definitely fuck with them. We had one dog that would constantly, like, goose you, come up right up your ass and stick his snout in your ass, but ha, and then circle you like a shark just to fuck with them. So
That's
it's
kind
constant. It,
of
it,
awesome.
it's it, it's actually really funny what these dogs do. But it's a lot of ball play, right? So you put your team inside a building and you just let the dog go search for his ball. Then that ball turns into searching for, the human odor. And there's all these other guys running around that are on your side. So, you keep your looks the same. That's why your uniform's the same, your helmet's the same. You get As soon as you throw a gas mask on, your dog doesn't even know who you are other than odor. So, that's something I've learned where he's now 8 and I'm going to start exploring an e-collar idea because from a distance, I can break him from 200, 300 yards away without a gas mask. Put a gas mask on, he's not going to hear me. How am I going to be able to get in touch with him? So being put in that scenario, it's like, okay, what can I utilize? And I talked to a couple people who are like, dude, use an e-collar. I've never used e-collar. Everything for me has been verbal. Hand signals are verbal. He's just been a stud, and it's like, all right, let's think outside the box here. I do a lot of stuff with the Marshal Service. And our team, as small as we are with a 10 square mile city, our team and our PD is very, very active as far as violent crimes. So for a part-time team, we're out 15, 20, sometimes 25 times a year, which is a heavy number for a small part-time team. And we aren't regional. We are our own city.
Okay.
Regional would be like four cities combined into one. And then they
Right.
service four cities.
So with getting the dog out there and involved in that story you just shared, is that I have to ask, is that usually the response you get from people, like, fuck no, don't come near me with that dog, like, I give up, I'm done? Do people hold out? I mean, how often does the dog actually end up biting somebody? And I feel like they probably, I'm sure he probably wants to, because that's his job, right? But like, how often does it play out where you actually get the dog in there, he bites the guy, like the whole nine yards?
Oh man, it's not that. It doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
It doesn't. When you've seen on the
And
internet,
I
there
would
was
quit
one.
so fucking fast, but don't let him bite me. I give up. I no
You are
way.
more likely to get a walk on, we call it, where I walk him on with for pain compliance, where I walk him on a leg. You are more likely to do that than get like a full blown building search, bite. Most of the time they're hidden, so the dog can't get to them. There's been some lucky ones where they thought they were hidden well enough, but they weren't. It wasn't the prettiest bite. The dog couldn't stand up. I couldn't stand up. It was underneath a house.
Oh.
And the guy was hiding under there. So they called me back in from, where was I, training, the detective sergeant at the time. It's like, hey, you want to come in? I'm like, yeah, what do you got? He's like, we got a guy, he's under the house. We just called his phone and we could hear the phone vibrating under the house. So it was a crawl space. We don't want to put anybody in it. Can you come do it? I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. So I give the announcements, I throw him in, and you immediately just start hearing yelling, and everyone kind of giggles because they know, like, okay, that dude
Worse.
fucked that up. I'm like, cool. But it's not that pretty bite. Because the dog is on all fours, he's crawling to get to that guy. Now, there again, you got to remember equipment. So I can break the dog verbally. I go to break the dog. The guy ended up grabbing his collar and holding him to a concrete pillar support for the house. Not in a malicious manner. He wasn't choking him. He wasn't doing anything. He just didn't want him to bite him anymore. So now I'm like, all right, break, come, nothing. Come on, bub, up, get all, happy go lucky, cute little voice, nothing. I'm like, fuck. So now I slide down there and I'm on my stomach and I see him. I'm like, dude, you gotta let go of that dog. You don't let go of that dog, you're gonna catch like nine beanbag shotgun rounds to the face. Unfortunately, you can't be the face. It's gotta be some of the green zones. Legs, arms,
Still gonna
stuff like
hurt
that.
like a motherfucker. Those things, yeah.
We'll do that. So he's I was like, dude, you let go of him. He will come back to me. He's not going to re-engage until I tell him to. All right, he lets go. He comes down and he lays right next to me, I'd say about 25 feet away. And now I'm telling the guy to get over here, and he won't. Now he's crawling further. He's crawling closer. So finally, I'm not going to send him again after announcements. I do. You got to crawl to us, face first. Crawl to us. I get it. We're all stuck down here, but stop fucking around. Or you're just going to keep getting bit over and over and over again. So
Yeah.
we ended up. I ended up resending him like two or three times for that one. Then there was another one. This is my all-time favorite. Is parole wants a guy. He's been staying with his mother, on and off. Mom deathly afraid of him. He's stealing from her, stealing her funds, yada yada yada. So the brother goes there, sees him there. He's ran from us once. We tracked for him. We tracked to a garage. Lo and behold, he ended up getting in the trunk of a car in that garage and left. So brother calls us back 3 weeks later. Yep, he's in the house. I know he's in the house. So the captain at the time didn't want the dog going first. We're like, hey, let's go search. He doesn't have a violent history. He's just got a narcotics history,
Okay.
which I don't agree with. Like, hey, you made your own bed, right? All right. They go and search it. They're like, we got nothing. So the brother's like, he's probably in a crawl space. I'm like, all right. You have any animals in? They're like, yeah, we got one. So he goes and gets the dog, brings it out, small little white dog. And I send the dog in. Raised ranch style home, if you're familiar, it's like split level almost.
Yeah.
Searches through all the odor on the first floor, goes upstairs. We follow, searching, double checking everything downstairs. Then we go up to the the landing of the split level. We just listen, and you hear them shutting down with that inhale, exhale. And next thing you know, you just hear the ah start. And this guy, I don't know what exactly happened, if he was in a crawl space and thought we were getting ready to leave, so he came out of the crawl space, but he was between the mattress and the wall and pulled the mattresses over him, but his fucking ankle was exposed. So his ankle got torn to absolute shreds. And
That's fucking awesome.
he pulled his ankle out of the dog's mouth to kick the dog in the face, which was a stupid idea because now it causes tearing. And the dog just did his job until we got to him, because we're still going to safely move through the house to make sure his crackhead buddies aren't in there. That the incompetent officers can miss sometimes, but that was one of my all-time favorites. It's such a rewarding career, and he's so good at stuff. Like, and you got to remember, it's not all about the bite. Tracking is a great thing because now it leads your detectives on what cameras to find. Instead of trying to go search five blocks of cameras to find out which way a car went, you now narrowed it down to one block. And then they search those cameras, and they end up getting a car, they end up getting a plate. You might not have anybody at the end, which is a lot of city tracking for us. There's nobody at the end of it, because everybody gets in a car or an Uber, depending on how fast they can get there. But it helps narrow down that investigation. Our detectives were very good of calling back 2 or 3 months later, "Hey, your dog was right on. He got in a car like 15 feet from where you stopped him." And
Nice.
then evidence recovery. So you get in a foot chase, you grab the guy. Then they're like, "Hey, we think he tossed something, call you in from home. Now you're doing evidence recovery." We had, not everything's the SWAT stuff either. The dogs are a great patrol asset for bar detail deterrent, right? We get these bars, they're just out of hand in the summertime at night. Put the windows down, fire the dog up, and everyone scatters. It's knowing the dog is kind of just available. Sometimes puts people in perspective, like, all right, we should probably behave tonight.
Yeah, it's so impressive when you look at what the animal's able to do and what we can do because just having that resource available. I've talked to guys, no shit, dudes that spent upwards of 2 decades in the military at, with Delta, and like, hey, would you say like it was a discussion based around fucking night vision. I'm like, this is definitely the best capability that we have available to us in modern day. And he goes, absolutely not. Like, what are you talking about? A dog. He goes, a dog is the biggest force multiplier. It's the best resource you can have, hands down. Like, night
There
vision
was
is
a
cool.
recent video too, where I don't remember who did it, but they were training two dogs to go at the same time, like
Really?
working together as a pack, not fighting each other. Like, you have two dogs now going through a structure as a pack. You're not getting one meat missile, you are getting two.
It's like that fucking like the Chris Pratt shit with the Velociraptors and all that. Like, if you can actually get them to work together, that
Think
is.
John Wick, the chick in John Wick there. She has those two mouths. It's like that.
Oh, is that the new? I don't think I've seen that. Is that ballerina one? I haven't seen that. Are you talking
I don't
about
remember
no,
which one
the one with
it
Holly
is.
Berry? I did see that one.
Yeah,
She does. She
she's
has a
got the two
two-toed.
mouths. Yeah, and they just maul people together as like brothers. I don't know. But this video was cool, man. It was they were integrating them together to work together as a team rather than against each other, which is kind of the more common thing for dogs that are alpha dogs. They fight to be the number ones. It is a force multiplier.
No, is that stuff you guys have to deal with dogs like that? Does the alpha personality come out where you kind of have to, like, I don't want to say continuously reinforce it, but like just maintain that, like, you're the alpha in the relationship type thing where they need to listen to you, or is that pretty well covered when they get through training?
A lot of it, believe it or not, comes from trust. So it goes back to that whole don't bite the hand that feeds you, but you will get a couple that will test you, and you just got to be on top of it. So if you go to go near their food bowl and they give you a side eye or a growl, guess what? You're going on your back and you're losing your food. And now the only way you're going to eat is out of my goddamn hand, because we're going to fix this. You are not going to test me. But
That shit's
there's
real, dude. Like, I never believed that. I never
yeah.
used to. My parents got a 140-pound cane corso. This is the first dog we ever had that you actually had to, like, it just you had to assert some dominance. Like, we had good dogs up to that point, and he was a great dog. His name is Deacon. We put him down, I think, 2 years ago. Fantastic fucking dog. Got him because we were all moving out, right? Hey, stay home with mom and and protect the house. Everybody shit their pants seeing that dog at the front door. But like, that was the first time I was ever introduced to the concept of, no, you gotta flip him on his back, you gotta hold him down, you have to make him kind of like submit, right? And really assert that alpha dominance in the household. And that shit's fucking real.
A lot of it even comes from inconsistent communication, right? So if you are consistent and you're trustworthy and you provide for the dog, they're never going to question that you're the alpha. It's when you're inconsistent, when you're not providing properly, when you start changing their schedules, that's where they're like, okay, he's giving me some different vibes here. Like, I'm going to try to take over the household. So a lot of it doesn't even come down to like they're constantly fighting for it. It's just like if you present the opportunity, they're going to take it. Give an inch, they're going to take a mile. Give an inch, they're going to take a mile. But these dogs are so well bred that they just want to work to please. They just want to please their handler. And they just want, like, if I let go of the ball, right? So the ball on the rope, if I let go of it, he doesn't run away from me. He goes, paws on my chest and just wants to play. And that's to please me, to keep me happy. If I'm not happy, he's not happy. And he knows it. His ears will go back, his head will go down. Which is where that partnership comes into play, that you're not finding any human that's going to do that.
Yeah. And I
You're
didn't
not.
realize I was talking with at SHOT. I was talking with Jason Demo. I don't know if you know Jason, but he had his service dog with him, Ratchet. And just like ask, because you saw a lot of dogs at SHOT Show. I was actually kind of surprised. And he's like, yeah, just the training stuff and his reward is attention and like praise and stuff from me. You don't have to like, it's not like with house dogs, right? Where they're like really treat dominate, dominant, where they're doing it 'cause they want to get, a piece of cheese or something like that. And, yeah, I mean, like it's totally different. And I actually had a pretty cool text conversation with him because I reached out. I was like, hey, there's a ton of dogs here, man. And I don't know if you just your first time, right, looking around, picking stuff up. I was like, do you think that all these dogs are like legit supposed to be here? Because it's real easy to just throw a service patch on the side of a vest. And I didn't even really get like he got down into a whole bunch of different stuff, like what's protected legally. Some of these are like protection dogs that if they tag on somebody will bite and all that shit. I'm like, it's a huge deal. And like, there's so much to it, which is obviously why I wanted to have you on because I'm like, I don't know the first fucking thing about this, but it's such a deep well. I think people overlook it, honestly.
So there's we run into it a lot in the policing side. I can't speak as far as like personal protection stuff, but in the police side, you see a lot of people try to pass their emotional support animal off as a service dog. So service dog, to my understanding, and I could be completely fucking wrong, but to my understanding through the ADA, it has to perform a task, has to be trained to perform a task. An emotional support animal, you get this little write up from your feel good doctor or what have you. And you could bring that, you could bring your dog. However, it's not protected by the ADA, whereas a service animal that provide that is trained in a task is covered by the ADA no matter where you go. I do not know how it works with personal protection. I don't, there's got to be a bunch of liability and insurances and this and that, but
Yeah, as I understand that one, they are not protected because they're not technically a service animal. They're a protection animal, which is, yeah, it's not ADA protected.
there's ways around it. Like, I know a lot of those guys are like veterans, and I'm sure those dogs are their service dog, right? They're trained in a very specific thing for them, I'm sure, as well, where they train them in apprehension. But I'm sure they're able to, identify, or there's an odor your body will give off for like anxiety or this or that. But the ADA covers all of that. The problem we run into is for like civilians, right? Is you get on an airplane, every dog and their mother is a goddamn service dog. No, it's not. No, it's not. If I bring my dog on an airplane, I got to put him under it because he's trained in biting,
Oh
because he's
shit.
not a service dog. I'd have to muzzle him, which he hates the muzzle, and I've never taken the time to do it. It's just laziness. I've never had an application for the muzzle before. So it's just I don't know the muzzle well enough, but I'd probably have to muzzle them to put them in the cabin. So I don't bring them. My cousin owns a daycare, and she'll bring him to daycare during the day, and he plays with other dogs all day, and she'll
And
bring him home
no
at night.
issues.
No issues, none.
See, and I was going to ask too, with like, because some of the service dogs, you always have like the patches, like don't pet and everything, because they're working, right? And I don't know how that works with like dogs trained to bite and everything. Like, I think you said you're going to go read to some kids at school. Are they allowed to like pet the dog, or
Oh
is
yeah.
there really? Okay, yeah.
They can pet them. I obviously give the caveat, they're still animals. If you're not paying attention, and this is on me, it's on me as the handler to put him in a safe position where, his back's kind of to a wall so you don't step on his tail. Right? And kids come to the side, don't come face on with them. Don't put your face in his face. So you don't say it until you have to sound like a jerk to, little kids that are excited to see the dog and pet him, and then he'll roll on his back and let you pet his belly and all that stuff. And he gets up and shakes, and then they freak out because, like, oh my God, he got up. But, like, no, he's just shaking off because everyone's petting him, and now his fur is all loose. But yeah, it's there's so many things that the dogs can do. So many things. There's service animals, emotional support animals. For people, kudos to them. If you can find a doctor that writes them, you can bring your dog wherever you want without question, so be it. But just don't think that's a service animal. Don't confuse it to you. Don't have the same rights. Do not have the same rights. Then I think I follow the guy, Canine Ratchet, online. I think we've had a
That's him.
conversation before. I just never
Yeah,
knew
that's
his
true.
name. It's sad these days where, I'm one of them too. It's like, people by their, I think we talked about this, people by their handle over their actual name. I think that's the worst thing in the world. Instead of, like, shaking a hand and calling a man by his name, you call him by their fucking handle. It's
I
bizarre to
met
me.
at least a couple of people at SHOT where they were like, "Hey, man," they introduced themselves, and I'm just like, "Yeah, nice to meet you." And they're like, then they follow up immediately with their Instagram handle. I was like, "Oh!" And then like the light bulbs and everything start coming on and clicking. And I'm like, "God, I feel like a little bit of a couple of them like haven't talked to me in a couple of years." So I was like, "All right, I don't feel as bad." But other people, like, I'm like, "Yeah, I should know a first name or something here, man."
Yeah, I put my name in the profile stuff. Like, I'm not a huge Instagram person. I repost just a lot of other people's stuff, help get the words out for, the homies and a lot of the companies that have helped me along the way. I was with a previous training company, kind of switching gears here a little bit. Previous training company, he had to fold that company up a little bit because he had some home stuff to take care of. No harm, no foul. Great for him to put family first, love it. I have nothing negative to say about it. And with sub-second, that's where I am now. We rolled our instructors over to the sub-second side, right? So sub-second started 2018, 2017 with Jeff there. Jeff is actually from the same city I'm from. And he was in the same high school I was, but I'm a little bit older than him. So I got out before he got in. Then he decided to go to the Army and never came back. So he made the right choice and stayed in Florida, where you don't have taxes through the fucking roof. And we would have him come out with the previous training company as a adjunct instructor. And then when everything kind of went south, I'm like, hey man, you want to still teach? He's like, let's do it.
Yeah,
So
man.
last year we started with that exit response course because as much as I love dogs aren't always the tool for the job. Dog might have to stay in the car. I might have to grab a rifle, handgun, my sniper rifle I've grabbed out in patrol more than I have in like a SWAT capacity.
Oh, shit.
So we decided to fill that gap with, in a way of saying, hostage rescue is a predominantly patrol function. It's never pretty. It never will be pretty, but there is no training in it. You talk to a lot of administrators, they're going to say, yeah, we got a SWAT team for that. But guess what? Sometimes your SWAT team's not making it out there. They're not. And then sometimes, like us, we're a part-time team. So on any given shift of nine guys, six of them might be the team. Now you have your hasty stuff. There's the pro to being a part-time, right? Whereas full time, they get a hell of a lot more training, a hell of a lot more resources. Their response time is much, much lower. It's usually anywhere from, 30 to 40 minutes versus an hour to 2 hours for a part-time team to come together or a regional team to come together.
Oh, yeah.
But patrol is your first line of defense. So we decided to put that course together, and we're very close with Shane Foster, with Guild Solutions Group. They've been really helpful to us, Born Primitive. Very, very, very helpful with us with, gift cards and uniforms and support and all that stuff because of the mission, right? So what's the mission? Help train patrol cops. What I love for patrol cops to be great shooters before they get into the field, yes, but that's never going to be a reality. So should everybody be a grandmaster? Yeah, I'd love for that. Am I a grandmaster? No, I'm not. But I'm constantly working at it, and I'm not even in a master's class. I don't even know what class I'd be in. But the academy only does 40 hours of training in firearms. That's it. 40 hours.
Yeah, it's not in
One
any
week.
state. It's not good. And I think I think people in the community know the severity of the situation with training. People out, I think, assume that every cop's going to walk out of the academy knowing how to shoot, knowing how to do structure search and clearance, right? Shooting, all that stuff.
That's
And
a
it's really just.
seven-hour day. I do that. That is for the state of Connecticut, for the municipal side, because our state police is a different side. They give me 7 hours. It's 8 hours, 1 hour for lunch. 7 hours. And the way it's worded is there's a code to it. It's 604B. So 604 Bravo is your structure clearance, but it's got a slash. Guess what's next to it? Active shooter.
Oh, good. Yeah.
There's your checkbox. Because they're calling it one and the same when it's not. Structure clearance, that's your alarm, your smashed front door, your this, your that. That can get into another level where it's, more advanced structure clearance when it's in a SWAT capacity or a high risk patrol capacity or a small units like plainclothes narcotic capacity. It can be more advanced. But then they're checking off that box too of active shooter. I don't like it. Don't like
It's
it right now, the Connecticut.
a lot of nuance and detail to put into only 7 hours and also share time with something else. Like that's
How many hours of baton they get?
of how many hours of what?
Baton? That fucking
Oh,
stick they swing?
I don't know. Is it more? Tell me it's not
Eight,
more.
18 hours.
Okay, yeah. I mean, good, I guess. I'd like to see that balanced a little bit better.
You know
I
where my
fucking
baton has sat for 14 years in the trunk of my car.
that's yeah I don't you know I don't I feel like you don't see those used very often anymore because people you I mean it's probably a sign of the times, right? People screaming for excess force and stuff like that, but like even with breaking windows and shit, there's so many better tools for
Yeah,
trying to
look at
break a
Good
window.
Dudes Concepts. I'm
Fuck
very
yeah,
close with Chris Curtis. Good Dudes
Chris is an
Concepts
awesome
out of
dude.
Florida. He's Christ. Every time I see him, he always picks me up. I'm like, Chris, put me down. Put me down. You're like 6'6", dude. Put me
He's
down.
like, dude, I'm 6'3" and he makes me look like a child. That dude, I would, he's got to be like 6'10". It is ridiculous. I walk up to him at SHOT Show. I was like, fuck.
He put so much time. There's some other creators to that too. That they put together a ton of time and effort and ideas behind that BRB.
Yeah.
And that thing has been used more than any other tool that I have seen because it's easy to carry. It does a hell of a lot of stuff from cutting through laminate. If you know how to breach doors with a little bit of technique, it'll breach most doors.
Yeah.
It's going to get you into a lot of stuff. We're one town over, there was a guy stabbed his girl, I think 50 times. And he was going to go for the kids next. They used the BRB. They broke a break and rake a window, and they ripped the kids out before you can get to them with
That's
that
the stuff
tool.
you like to hear. Yeah.
All with that tool. You want to know why? Because it was on their person. It wasn't stuck in the trunk of the car. Like, a 36-inch or 30-inch, 36-inch bar, whatever you want to call it. I'm not a breaching professional. That's Guild and his thing. All his guys, they are 100% professionals in that. Can I get through a door? Sure. Can I show somebody else how to do it? No, not the right way, but a way to do it, sure. But I'm not going to carry a 30-inch bar. I'm not going to carry a collapsible one. But this, that BRB, I'm going to keep on my person at all times. It's more, it's a rescue tool as well as a breaching tool. You can do a
100%.
lot of stuff with it. I mean, hell, if I got to put that little pike end through somebody's skull in a fight, I'm going to. If
Yeah.
deadly force is justified, so be it. That's a tool.
It
It's what it
works.
is. Yeah, it's no different than the old Maglite days.
Yeah, we don't talk about that. No one else talk about that
I
anymore.
was I got on after the Maglite days. I got on after the Blackjack days, after the Maglite days. We didn't have body cameras till about 3 years ago. Where I am, a lot of people got on with body cams. That was a little bit of an adjustment, but we're lucky enough that our department is not really too much of a pain in the ass with like language. Whereas like my buddies down in Virginia, their department is like, you swore, you're getting written up. It's like, what? Who cares? So it's a good time. There's so much that lacks in training that's a whole different discussion in itself. So we try to do what we can. I'll take guys off the road and try to do, half hour firearms, doubles. We'll do three mags of doubles. I never really had a name for him, but Paul Costa with Achilles, awesome fucking firearms instructor. There's Paul Costa, there's Dave Costa, there's Rick. And then, they call them 50-50s, where it's one round in the pipe and you're watching what your dot does, you're aware of what the dot does. And we'll do a half hour of 50-50s, and next day we'll do a half hour of doubles, and then we'll try to do. I'll try to get as many people off as I can, but then call volume starts to come in. Now we got to go to the domestic. Now we got to go out and go to the car accident with injuries. Now we got to go out and be somebody's parent. And that's the side of patrol that people ignore. A lot of times on the internet, people get into arguments because they forget that sometimes cops have a day job. It's not just always SWAT, SWAT, SWAT. At least where I am, we don't have full-time teams. So we have to be like a master at all. In a way,
Yeah,
because
you have to.
we don't have the specialists. Like, hey, this is the breach team. Hey, this is this team. We don't have that. You got to be a master at all.
Yeah, well-rounded at everything, for sure.
Yeah, it's sometimes disheartening because you don't get the backing from the administration. They give you the whole rah-rah speech, like, yeah, put it all together. Then you finally put it together, and like, yeah, we'll wait till next year.
I get that. Well, and I work in a different field, but that's always great. You do all that leg work, and you're like, sick, we nailed everything, and they're like, we love it. For later. And you're like, okay, fuck me, I guess. And it's just, it's the reality though. It's always comes down to dollars and liability and hours and all that,
You bring up liability, right? So you take dollar amount and you put an extra, let's just call it an extra $100,000 into defensive tactics. There's Officer Survival Series. There's a great Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu style defensive tactics. EFC, the Effective Combat Guys, they do a great defensive tactics courses and whatnot. You dump an extra $100,000 into that and get 20, 30, 40 cops trained up. With some of the basic stuff, a little bit more advanced along the way. How many lawsuits you think you're going to stop?
I mean, I would hope you cut that number in half.
You will. 100% you will. We've seen it in our agency. One of our guys is very well versed in the Officer Survival Series, which is, I think it's like two nights a week and then, on a weekend. And then they do mock trial stuff for use of forces. It's a very, very good program. The Effective Combat Guys, Adam and Scott, they run a very, very good program. And most of the use of force that cops get into are hands-on. It's hands-on first, and then, they end up using lethal force because they're too incompetent with
Escalates.
their own hands. Right.
Right.
So, everybody uses the word, oh, you should have de-escalated. Well, yeah, you should have, but your de-escalation method should have been hands-on faster.
Yeah.
Ask, tell, make. That's how you're going to stop uses of force or complaints of excessive use of force. If I'm going to put you on your ass in a matter of 30 seconds because talking to you is not going to work, guess what? If probable cause already exists for the arrest and you're under arrest, there is no negotiating anymore. There is none. I don't have to negotiate. I'm not going to try to talk you for 4 hours into handcuffs. We got other people that might have emergencies across the city. If I got to put you on your ass, put you in handcuffs, and get you locked up and throw you in a cell and go about my day, I'm going to. It's well within the confines of the law. It's well within my own ethics and my department's policy and ethics. So, too many people are afraid to go hands on because they're so afraid they're going to get sued. However, if the department's put out a little bit of money instead of coffee with a cop and paying people overtime to be there because nobody wants to goddamn be there, now you take that money and you put it into defensive tactics. You put it into firearms. You put it into, the skill builder stuff, like the exit response course we do. You put it into those skills, those specific skills. And you're going to see your complaints come down. You're going to see your lawsuits come down. All of that is going to pay off in a much greater manner. And you're going to see confidence go up. When you see confidence go up, you see better decision making, whether it's lethal force, less lethal force, or just merely hands on. And don't get me wrong, you have to know your street laws. And I say street laws because it's like your common sense. Do I have enough PC at this given time to know this person's under arrest and I can use force to put them under arrest?
Right.
I don't need to go back and look at case law for, things that aren't emergencies. But if I know I have enough probable cause, why am I going to wait any longer?
Right.
You're just going to allow somebody to start developing their own little plan because they know they might be going to jail now. Now you're allowing them to escalate while you're trying to de-escalate because it's just, if I got to punch you square in the face, I'm going to punch you square in the face. That's a de-escalation method. Guess what? It's de-escalation because they didn't allow you to go for the kitchen knife 10 minutes from now because you didn't want to go get arrested.
Right.
And
I mean,
it's
knowing
happened.
that is, well, because then you see it too. There's body cam footage all over the internet. You see officers wait to turn that, whatever air quotes here, turn that corner in the situation and just decide, hey, we're done asking. Like you have to force compliance at that point, and it is what it is. But I mean, when you look at the amounts that are paid out on some of these lawsuits and stuff, right? Usually do I don't want to say it's never I don't want to say it's like negligence, but bad training, lack of training, absence of training on how to de-escalate that situation. You'd save so much money by investing like, I don't know, 5% of what you paid out. You could have prevented it, but you didn't. And I would be interested to see some studies on that stuff. I'm sure someone's got to have it out there. Like when you look at,
I'm sure there
risk
is too. There's
mitigation.
a common misconception that de-escalation means I have to talk you off a ledge. That's not true.
No,
That's not
that.
true.
It's like this. That's the first step. Like
That's
it's
what
always like
society
that.
thinks it is. And that is ingrained into these recruits. So when I walk my happy ass into the classroom so we could do a little bit of chalk talk before we do our 7 hours of building search, first it's lose that yes or no sir stuff. Then right away it's okay. I grew up in sports, so if anyone needs to throw a lip pillow in and throw either a skull, pack a skull, pack a lip, do whatever, I need your undivided attention. So if you have to do that, do it. When the academy staff comes back, spit it out, swallow it. I don't care what you do, but if you're fiending for it, you're not listening. If you've got a nicotine thing and you're not getting your fix, then you're not listening. I only have 7 hours with you. I need you to be a sponge. Because you're only going to get 7 hours and you're only going to remember maybe an hour of it. So the very first thing I ask is, what do they teach you guys about de-escalation? Like, oh, you're trying to talk to people and see if they're in crisis. Like, no, I'm so tired. I'm so tired of everybody that breaks the law is given the excuse of, oh, they're in crisis.
Had a bad
I'm
day.
sorry, dude, but get fucked. Everyone's having a bad day. Nobody cares.
That's just
Nobody
life,
cares.
man. That's just fucking
Yeah.
life. I have bad days all the time. I don't go out and
If I have a
do
bad
something to see
day,
a cop. Yeah.
I'm not going and robbing the local 7-Eleven. That's
Yeah, no.
that's
No,
not a
it's.
bad day. That's just a bad person. Like
Yeah, it's not.
let's not confuse the two.
Yeah, it's not how I'm dealing. Yeah, I mean, come on, let's be real about it, And I think that you guys just get like police in general. You get the blame because it's convenient, right? We become a society that lacks personal accountability for your own decisions and actions. And you can dress it up, paint it up. Lord knows our politicians, our current laws have done everything they can to try and displace that accountability. And that's how we ended up with just where we're at today. As a society, as law enforcement in the country, all of it's going to be a painful adjustment to get back to where we're at. And I don't mean to cut you short here. I know we're pushing time a little bit, but I do want to, just as we're coming up to the end here, where can people get a hold of you if they have questions for you? Either on the training side, the dog side. I know you're on social media. I don't know if you're listed through the website with Subsecond, but because we hit on so much tonight, if people are trying to get some questions out there, how are they able to
Yeah, so
contact you?
you can reach me on Instagram. It's T_MAR_232. I am linked up in collab with a lot with Subsecond. And then for an email, it's training@subsecondllc.com. And it comes right to my phone. So I'll be able to get back to you within a couple minutes. That's anything from like just policing in general. I'm not a big DT guy. I struggle with it myself, but I can steer people the right way to that. The structure clearance is more of my thing. The dog stuff is more of my thing. Sniper stuff is more of my thing. It's very, very, very easy to get a hold of me. I'm pretty. My phone's usually always next to me for the call outs and for this and for that. So, if I don't actually answer within the hour, I'm probably finally asleep.
Yeah, there you go. And
I'm
which,
finally asleep.
yeah. Well, dude, I appreciate it. I know there's a ton we could still get into. Hopefully, we can do another one of these in the future here. We'll link back up again. But I really, really appreciate the time and definitely love hearing about the dog. But yeah, appreciate it, man. I know you've had a long day, so we'll wrap it here. And like I said, we'll do another one in the future. And stay safe out there,
Yeah,
man.
man. We'll do. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon, man.
Finally have gotten the K9 episode knocked off the list. And honestly, I really just want to do more. Like just hearing about all the stuff that Tommy's able to do with Otto, the way that these dogs are able to be effective and capable out in the field, right? The success that they're able to bring to the relationship with their handler, right? And then obviously you can hear like the compassion, the partnership, the love, right, for the dog. And like I said before, I love dogs. I've always loved dogs. Save for just a handful of years when I was growing up, when my younger siblings were very small and my mother's patience was very thin. We always had a dog growing up. It was I'm trying to think here. We had a lab. We had two labs. And then the third dog we had that was really like the last dog that I had before I moved to my parents' place was a Cane Corso, which you guys haven't looked up. It's kind of like the dog from The Sandlot. Ours was like 140 pounds, and his name was Deacon, and he's a really good boy. He's not with us anymore, sadly, but just great dogs. They're huge, huge parts of life, and the way that they're able to be effective in the law enforcement capacity. And honestly, like, I don't even know. I'm sure there's probably even more to this when we get into the military role that these dogs play. Maybe, and I know there's a couple of people I could reach out to that would be able to and would be happy to have the discussion around them and the force multiplier they bring to the conversation when you talk about, tactically solving a problem, structure clearance. And Tommy he touched on so much of it, man. And in modern policing today, we're looking for ways to help save lives. And I think the dog is probably the best tool that they have available. And I hope that departments are leaning into that because I know, at least in the city that I have here, I think we have two canines for our. And I could be totally wrong there. I think that's like an educated guess. I think we have two canines here, and that comes after we had a pretty tragic shooting a couple years back, where the police were called to a trying to think like a banquet hall. That's it, a banquet hall, and somebody, of course, the internet erupted, and you had all the great commentary like "fuck that damn dog" and everything. Guy pulled out an AK. Which, of course, what would you? I mean, at a graduation party, banquet hall, somebody just looking to have a good time, just minding their own business. They got an AK in the car, right? For sure. And the dog's name was Axe. And unfortunately, Axe was shot and killed in the line of duty. And the outpouring of love and support by our community for that dog, like, it just shows you, like, you see a lot of love and a lot of respect. Even, I think for the most part, people can agree, disagree with whatever's going on in law enforcement right now, whatever. Everybody loves the dogs. It's that it goes back to the whole man's best friend thing and everything. And they'll do whatever you tell them to do. Basically, they're trained that way. That's what they want to do to make you happy. And you know, really, I think we highlighted a lot of that with what Tommy was sharing. We got into the training around it, you know, and there's a lot of misconceptions out there. You know, I, for one, you know, I have the largest base of my knowledge about working dogs and dogs in the military, law enforcement, whatever, comes from media, you know, and I don't think that's an uncommon thing for most people, right? Oh, are all the commands in German? Well, not always. It just comes out, how do you train them and your personal preferences behind that training? I would have assumed otherwise, right? Because you see so much stuff out there. The commands are in German or Dutch or something like that. So that, oh, the other people that, you know, the opposition, the bad guys, right? They can't issue that same verbal command. And like, you know, Tommy got into that. Hey, that I've never encountered a situation where that made a difference, you know? And we talked about collars and tools and, you know, leashes and stuff like that. And certainly this doesn't have to only apply to working animals. I mean, some of the stuff that he mentioned is very applicable to the experiences I've had with my own dogs that live with me and some of the challenges I've had with training them on how to walk on a leash, how to listen to me when, you know, certain reasons on why, you know, why my dog, why Drake will listen to me off the leash going from the car to the house and around the yard and everything, and why Jax, my wife's dog, the younger one, will not. Because we put more time in with Drake and hoped that, you know, maybe he would help us teach the other dog. And certainly some things did, but other things didn't. And, you know, we got into a lot of that stuff. So it's a really nuanced discussion. There's so much to it, man. I feel like we probably could have filled hours and hours talking about, you know, stories and the training and the stuff that goes on. We touched a little bit on a little bit. And there's a lot to it. And I certainly look forward to an opportunity to reconnect with Tommy to do this again and get into more of this, you know, because I think that the working dog thing is just, it's so cool. It's so cool. You know, there's not another word for it, I think, that really describes my enthusiasm for the subject. So great first time touching on it. I know we've had other guests on here, guys like Rick Hogg, who have mentioned dogs and stuff, but this, I think, was one of probably the first discussions where we had a real dedicated conversation around dogs and being a handler and working with them, the challenges that can be part of that. I mean, I wanted to ask too, because there was a he mentioned a PT test you had to pass to be a dog handler, and I'm just curious what was that and why? Like, what's the reasoning? Obviously, I think you have to be able to keep up with the dog and work with the dog and everything. I think that's a huge part of it, but maybe there's stuff we don't know or I just missed or wouldn't think of. So I'm sure we'll do another you know, follow-on discussion and conversation with Tommy. Great dude. I was so happy to be able to run into him at SHOT Show and have a conversation about everything that's going on, his work with, you know, what he's doing with Sub-Second as, you know, as the guy leading their training program and stuff. And then hearing about, you know, some of the task force work that he mentioned that multiple times through the conversation there. So I'm not sharing anything you guys don't know at this point. But if you guys enjoyed this, before I forget about it, please hit the subscribe button. Make sure that you guys are notified every time we have a new episode, a new recording drop, because we're doing these every week with a sit rep on the first Sunday, usually, of the month, bringing you guys fresh content like this, just insight and information from subject experts like Tommy on topics like handling a canine, working domestically with canines, for everything from narcotics to, you know, surrounding call outs, SWAT, all that stuff and more, right? Because we probably could have gone another hour just diving down that rabbit hole, man, talking about training and why police need more and better and how we can do that and all that good stuff. So thank you guys so much for checking out this week's episode. I sincerely hope you guys enjoyed it. As always, leave a comment in the comment section if you have thoughts or questions, or shoot Tommy a message if you got questions for him. But that's all I have for you guys for this week's episode. Until next time, you guys stay safe out there, stay warm, and like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.